a bit like a tragedy. You always kind of remember you where you were at the time something like that happens. And I remember I was in Louth with all of my family eating stew in an Irish bar in Louth because there were so many of us that they decided to put it on. It wasn't a celebration that Staunton got the job, but it was that night he got the job. And we just got a text saying Steve Staunton and Bobby Robson had got the Ireland job, and it was just absolutely bizarre. So I couldn't really understand. I was like, that must be a miscommunication. It's like when you're at a festival and you get a text that someone's dead. You're like, that hasn't happened. That's a lie.
Well, I think it's because also the build-up. Didn't the FAI kind of promise that there'd be...
yeah. Well, the names are really linked with it.
Like a very big signing. Yeah. He was only player-manager at...
it was Walsall. Just before. Or was it assistant manager? I don't even know.
Assistant player-manager. Or something. Yeah. Even worse, anyway.
Yeah. Is there one standout moment from his entire tenure that you really remember?
The Cyprus game. Like, I go back to the kitchen, get a cup of tea, get some food, then I go back in.
There's
another goal.
Andrew, have you anything that stands out to you in that time?
The late winner in San Marino.
Oh, yeah. What a moment.
The highlight of my early childhood watching Ireland.
Was the San Marino game the week after the Cyprus?
I think it was, There came
who
quick,
scored the winner
succession.
Again?
Stephen Ireland.
Stephen Ireland.
The winner, all right, a 94th minute winner. For me, there was you mentioned Stephen Ireland there. He had such a quick rise and fall, all sort of confined to that time, because we never really got him back after that, which is really strange. Can I throw one more in that stands out to me? Don't be screaming at the RTE team that they were cocking up the Stan interview when they tried twice to cut to Staunton, and it made an absolute mess. Cut away. You can hear it. You can still find this on YouTube. He just goes, "Ah, that's come on, it's total cock up," going absolutely mad. Gentlemen, there's a lot to unpack in this show. I want to very briefly start off before we jump into all of the Staunton chat with the fact that his predecessor Brian Kerr had the highest win ratio of any Irish manager. But at the end of the day, he probably did get two qualification attempts and didn't make it. So probably fair enough to let him go. But it's always one of those things that people mention at the start. Do you think Brian Kerr got a bit of an unfair shake?
I think people now kind of look back at him as a really good coach, and he's looked back in a very good light. But then you look at the team he had qualifying for the 2006 World Cup. I don't think any of the current Ireland team would make that side.
Yeah.
I was thinking about it yesterday. I can't see anyone who's making that team. And we criticise O'Neill so much, Trapattoni, and Trapattoni had an awful team.
Yeah.
And he still qualified for a major championships.
I think you're right. I think that's one of the things when you look back on these games, you really do notice, like, quite a lot that...
Given, Dunne, Finnan, Hart, and that's just... And then
although Finnan certainly towards the end of this is coming to a bit of a decline, Steve Finnan. But I think there's maybe an element of that quite a few players in this, because we get onto it and you look at the defenders that are used quite a lot through this tournament, you start to realise we've no depth. Once you take maybe one or two of those starting 11 out, you're really struggling. But let's jump into Stan then. We're undecided how much Brian Kerr will get chatting these future podcasts, so look out for more. You never know, we might get the Brian Kerr years in. A few years on from this tenure then, does the appointment look any less ridiculous? Because there is, I suppose, at the moment in club football, maybe less international football actually, but there's quite a lot of underqualified ex-players in jobs, and, you know, just beloved players. I mean, off the talking about Solskjaer, I mean, Lampard came in after doing 1 year. Sorry, Andrew, I know you're running to the microphone.
What did you say there? Lampard?
Frankie Labs.
Sorry.
This is an Irish podcast over again. We're not here to, you know how they all react when we bring up the English clubs. But, you know, Ljungberg's in there at Arsenal. People are talking about him getting the job. There's a lot of this sort of flying around, even in the Premier League, club football at the moment. Does it look any less bizarre a couple of years on, I suppose, the Staunton appointment with Sir Bob?
Say even more bizarre. Yeah. I don't think it even compares to Solskjaer or Ljungberg. Like, Solskjaer, he's coached before and been successful in Norway. Ljungberg's just there for an interim manager, and he's been part of the Arsenal backroom staff.
Yeah. Only just, mind you, but yeah, it's another story.
And the fact that Staunton did nothing after that, like, it's...
Well,
just bizarre.
Again, that's not totally true, but I'll bury the lead a bit on that one. I suppose if you look at it, it had all got off to a terrible start with that interview. And we won't harp on about that too long, because that's the one that everyone knows. I'm the gaffer, etc., etc. Came across quite poorly, I thought, in that. And I think that was his first bad move. I think he's not the only one who would have done that kind of thing. I think he obviously felt that he had to exert himself. And I wonder, is some of it, because he doesn't... Staunton, he's never come across as too odd a bloke, and there's not too many of his ex-teammates who would sort of say, oh yeah, a strange fella, or anything like that. He was quite liked, but I think he maybe it was just a bit of fish out of water in this scenario. It's sort of, as times were changing, all he had was maybe that to impose himself, because tactically he didn't seem at it. And at that time, I mean, I presume that's what Bobby Robson, who was brought in for, even you'd probably say Bobby was gone at that time. It was maybe one of those appointments that theoretically might have worked out if they had years and years to plan it, but it looked like a bit of a snap decision with not really much holding it together.
Yeah, like, are there any stories about why he was appointed? Like, did he have a very good manifesto?
A good question. Yeah. Almost certainly not.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. I know there was an article going around about, was it Brendan Rodgers?
Yeah.
He had like a 35. Did Staunton have like a 50 page manifesto?
This was before,
you know,
the days that manifestos were required. Sam Allardyce was in his element at the time, you know what I mean? That would tell you all you needed to know. Again, look, the man motivators were big. Staunton was a very popular character back then. He would have been seen as you know, I mean, what?
But was there literally nobody else?
Well, it was the cheap option, wasn't it?
It's not like the FAI didn't have some cash.
Yeah. Just very relevant comment at the time we're recording, but look, we've just held out for another day on that as well.
Well, let's cash in.
Yeah. Quote marks, yeah, all right. Probably, yeah. Let's start off with the spectacular beginning to Staunton's time. A 3-0 win over Sweden. Everything was looking rosy again. I don't really remember the defeats after that. There was Chile and there was Netherlands.
4-0,
yeah. Do you remember that?
I was there, yeah.
Were you there?
Yeah.
Oh, what was the feeling in that? Because everyone was on... I remember being on such a buzz, especially Liam Miller's goal, as we've mentioned a couple of times already, but there was lots to like in that game. You know, we were by far the better team, and a lot of players were just looking very happy to be out there playing, but I suppose this is the problem with friendly matches, bad way to measure things. What was the feeling after the Netherlands game?
It's like, here we go again.
Yeah.
That was I remember being there with my uncle and dad at the time, and it was just like, yeah, look, here we are. Has anything probably got better? No. And then I think, was there a game against the Chile 1-0 they were beating as well?
Yeah.
And then obviously going into a qualifying campaign, that's not really the way you want to be going into it.
But mind you, I think there was a lot of goodwill for him at that time, even just with that one win, because we'd seen, oh look, he can win games, and we looked good in there. So there's one of three that he's played well and we've looked good. And to be fair, it started off with an unlucky enough defeat to the Germans. It was a deflected free kick that went in. Staunton, as we sort of mentioned, was sent off for kicking a bottle, which is
outrageous.
That's just stupid. Like, it's the worst thing you can... I mean, he was done for the next game then. He touchline banned for what proved to be probably the defining game of his time. But as I said, those early stages, there is a little... It's only a 1-0 defeat to Germany, who were, you know, big fish at the time. Didn't look all that negative a start. And I think that's one of the weird things you sort of see in this, is there is little moments where you're like, maybe it's gonna start to grow legs, and it just never does. It falls apart. And the Cyprus 5-2 win is probably an excellent example of that. We'll just run through the goal. Stephen Ireland with an early goal. Richard Dunn then let Cyprus back in with a bit of a shocker. 5 minutes later, Paddy Kenny comes for a ball. He gets nowhere near. Completely forgot Paddy Kenny even was part of the squad at that point. But again, probably tells you a little bit of something to do with the depth of the team, which you start to see in a minute. He gets nowhere near. Cyprus head in. 2-1. Richard Dunn then gets us in for a cracking header before half-time. So 2-2. Going in at half-time, good stuff. Straight away, second half. Andy O'Brien, again, another one of those that you don't really remember played for Ireland all that much, but a really clumsy penno. Probably a little bit soft, but just daft stuff. Last two goals are then summed up by Ireland, essentially. Give the ball away in the full-back position, right back, then left back. Cyprus, I mean, the fourth goal is a great example. The defenders are just running all over the place, scattered around. Just clearly no system to keep them all together. And you know, you do keep in mind, it is Paddy Kenny in goal. He didn't play for Ireland for a reason. Shaken was a much, much better goalkeeper at that point. That 5-2, though, you don't really remember that Paddy Kenny was in net, do you? You know?
Yeah, Paddy Kenny wasn't that bad.
He wasn't that bad, but at the same time, it's not a whole lot of... it's not the exact Irish team we remember, though. You know what I mean? I think Staunton, maybe sometimes, we're thinking, Given and Duff and... There is a little bit of Andy O'Brien and Paddy Kenny having absolute shockers and letting some stinkers in. Unfortunately, though, that is the result that lives long, isn't it? It's the one that stays in the memory.
Yeah, I think the overriding memory of that game is the pitch being like a car park every time the ball...
As I said earlier, you have to say that like Roy Keane. Give me your best Cork impression.
I don't think I'll be able for that.
Car park.
No, it's just every time the ball bounced, it seemed to be going just all over the place. Mm. Like, that's just the one thing that sticks out. as well as the result, which was, less said the better, I think.
The Irish manager, Steve Staunton, now he's talking to Tony O'Donoghue. It's coming up. All right, okay. Be interesting to hear what he says, actually.
I'd be very interested to see what he has to say, but I don't like to see a good football man in this situation.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, let's hear what he has to say. He's talking to Tony O'Donoghue.
What's a cock-off this is?
Hold on, I'll come back to see you.
I'm sorry, we have some technical problems. We will sort them out, but we can't sort them out at this particular point in time. See the level of expectancy.
The pitch was a fucking bloke.
You can see the level of expectancy.
When Neymar was shaping up to take that penalty, I thought he was fucking dreading it.
We're on air.
Oh, we're not, are we?
We are. Well, I apologise for that, but obviously...
I'm sorry.
That was an inexactitude. All right, let's get our final predictions.
The results that followed that then, we drew with the Czech Republic, hammered San Marino 5-0. But then, I said that was the defining 5-2 result, but one that lives long in everyone's memory was a 94th minute winner to beat San Marino. And the writing was pretty much on the wall before that, probably the 5-2 defeat, but it clearly hadn't been good enough at that point. Do you remember much about that San Marino late winner? Were you celebrating, either of you?
I think the San Marino game, the Cyprus game, nearly blended to one.
Yeah, you're right, actually.
In my memory, a similar kind of stadium, I think, just on the telly, they look kind of similar. Horrendous performances. Yeah. You could argue a worse performance against San Marino. They're just, because Cyprus are a better team.
If I remember, there was well over 100 places between us at that time as well.
Mm.
It comes to, I mean... We did only just get through a campaign where we beat, was it Gibraltar 1-0? Who did we beat?
I think this campaign.
Yeah, yeah. So, look, there's some disastrous results out there, but I think it was the manner of this one that it was so close to slipping away, and you feel embarrassed celebrating a 94th minute winner when you've come from, a pretty good campaign previously.
Yeah, and you're probably still, with this in 07?
Yeah.
Around 07? Yeah, I think we're still... feeling that kind of 02-03 buzz.
Yeah.
Think, we're Ireland, we're the shit, but now it's kind of we don't have as high expectations of ourselves.
That's true.
We know what we are. I think we...
I think a lot of that comes down to some of the decline of the players, as I said, and you look at a couple of wins after this game. So we move on from that shocking defeat. We picked up a couple of wins against Wales and Slovakia. And then in the last few games, 3 points from 12 pretty much did it. The writing was on the wall. As I said before that unlikely to qualify, including that home draw with Cyprus, which, again, that was a Steve Finnan late equaliser. And his only international goal, actually, which is a shame because I'm a huge fan of Steve Finnan. I absolutely love the guy. But one of those where he'd had a pretty poor campaign, I seem to remember. And, sticking that goal in, it just summed it up. It was who cares? I may as well just go worse at this point. As I said, you go back through, a lot of the problems was the defensive organisation. I reckon Dunne and O'Shea had sort of formed a partnership at that point, and you think back and you're like, that's a great partnership. But, I mean, after that was Paul McShane, Darren O'Dea, Alex Bruce and Andy O'Brien. And do any of them ever strike you as players who were up to international calibre? I would say definitely not. Maybe Andy O'Brien, very, very early on, could have played a part. But even now, if our defence was looking at one of those players at the back, you'd be very disappointed, I think. I think there's no harsh way to say that.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah. And I think, as I said, players sort of drifting away from the Premier League at this point, this is where it really starts to kick in. I mean, a few of those players I mentioned were probably Premier League players at the time. Outside of those, you're talking, where were the options? We really didn't have a whole lot outside. And I'd actually say that's the lack of investment on the league over here and maybe in the youth, it starts to become quite apparent at this point because, as I said, just nothing comes true after that. Richard Dunne, we use him for another couple of years until he's, 30-something-year-old huffing and puffing. John O'Shea, we used as much as possible for years and years and made him captain towards the end, No one was coming to push these players out, and I do wonder if that's a bit of the problem with this Staunton regime,
Well, you get teams with bad players, and I say bad players in inverted, you know, but if they've a good coach.
More quotes from you.
Yes. especially for national teams.
Yeah.
They can perform at a level above their quality on paper.
Mm.
So
I'd say the names listed there, though. McShane, OD, Alex Bruce and O'Brien.
But they're still they playing Premier League, Championship.
Yeah, I would say even at that point, they just weren't up to it. And really, you give
but
a spin to
yeah,
it.
But
I'm sure at the time it probably was.
They're more up for it than losing 5-2 to Cyprus.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah, yeah, that is fair. Is there anything else that stands out to you boys from this tenure? I know there was one or two elements we listed. I mean, we talked about a terrible story, Andrew, off air, where Steve Staunton was threatened early on by an oddball with a fake gun. Apparently had done this a couple of times. I remember that standing out. I remember Bobby being unwell and stepping away for some time as well, which I think was sort of mid-campaign and also didn't stand us all that well because we were a little bit like, what are we going to do now? This has clearly gone wrong.
Doing, like, no disrespect to Bobby Robson, but
you wondered what
was his role?
Advisor.
Like, international advisor or something. Yeah.
Brilliant.
I just remember the USA tour.
Oh, yeah.
And we played Ecuador Giant Stadium. Yeah. And Joe LaPira played, who played for University of Notre Dame.
Right.
And I always remember the USA goals.
Mm.
And they always remind me of the goalposts that you got for your 10th birthday. those plastic ones that you kind of stick together
and
the holes and you put the poles in. And they kind of fall over when someone hit.
That would be great if that was a thing now. Yeah. Even. Just so hard you smash the goals to bits. I think we should look into that.
But the goals kind of sit up.
Yeah.
If you rock one against the crossbar, they kind of go up.
I'll tell you one other element that stands there for me is, I think we mentioned it again earlier on before we started recording, Andy Reid's, that whole incident.
That was very
funny. Andy Reid is one of those very strange international careers where he couldn't write a full book, but he could write like probably a long essay and I'd have a good read of it. If the Athletic could get hold of Andy Reid, I'd say there's a fairly good story in there, all the dealings he'd had with the FAI. And because essentially, for those who don't know, the FAI tried to get him back involved, sent a request to Spurs for international duty, and of course he'd moved at that point to Charlton. So, you know what I mean?
Sending it to the wrong address. I can just imagine the Spurs
the hierarchy
room
of Spurs.
Just shitting themselves like
over the absolute clowns.
But okay. Like there was kind of like a trio. Sorry, didn't interrupt you. Like a trio of kind of what could have been midfielders. You know, the Andy Reid, Stephen Reid, and then Stephen Ireland, of course, who kind of I don't think really reached the heights that
two of them because of fitness. Really, I mean, Andy Reid was never. Just never fit enough.
Stephen Reid was always cropped.
Was always injured, and Stephen Ireland look at his own stuff going on.
Yeah,
a perfect example, maybe this of great player not being any use at a manager. There's loads of them. Roy Keane's another one. There's a whole bundle of them. These guys who were leaders, who were captains of their country and clubs, just didn't really work out. And Stan's career really showed this. And from that point on. A story I was going to say to you earlier on, but I held off till now. Darlington was where he went after this job. Darlington were in an awful ill state at this time, and I'd say it was one of the few jobs on the planet Stan could have got at that point, bar the after-dinner circuit. I remember my old man actually essentially was so fed up with watching Staunton that he just backed every team against Darlington for a long time and just let the winnings roll on and roll on. And he made a bundle of cash off it. And he felt so bad by the end for sort of slagging off Darlington that he bought two Darlington kits, and I have one still at home.
Nice.
I then wore that one evening out when I was living in Germany sometime back. I wore that out one evening, same colour as the Germany national kit. I thought, get away with this. No one would recognise it. And I was standing in a hostel having a drink, and I see some lad looking at me from across the room, absolutely stunned. Lad from Darlington walks straight over to me, goes, why on earth have you got a Darlington kid living here? I had to explain the whole story to him, and he told me all about how much of an absolute shambles Stan's tenure was and what an absolute nightmare it had been for the club. So just one of those things. He did go on after. I think he briefly was Gary McAllister's assistant somewhere. I'm going to say Leeds when they went down like three. Was it Leeds? Yeah. Yeah, when they were relegated like twice or three times.
Yeah.
McAllister took over and he went in as assistant, and I think he was there a month. So... unfortunately, that tells you a whole lot about Stan's tenure. I suppose anything at all positive you remember about that Barley and Miller's goal? Studs.
I could probably come up with something.
No, look, let's leave it on a negative.
Joel appears hair and its headband. Right. That's the only thing.
The 0-0 draw against Germany.
Yeah. Fair enough, though. I didn't even mention that in it. There's Don Givens getting a game at the end against Wales. That was nice for Don. Fair play to him. That's about it. That's about all I can muster from this.
Bang of no came off that.
Oh, God, yeah. Massively was.